The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 22nd chapter. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap Jesus in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with truth and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. The Gospel of the Lord. There is a very nasty cold virus flying around central Pennsylvania right now, and I was one of the lucky ones who caught it. Hooray! It was fortunate timing, really, as this past week was one of the quietest on my calendar in a while. No committee meetings, no funerals, no choir rehearsals, no one in the hospital. Thank goodness, because I was useless. Along with a sore throat, headache, stuffy nose, and cough came profound fatigue. I could only get myself moving enough to feed my dog Cooper or make myself yet another cup of herbal tea with honey, and then I'd have to go back to bed. I was also miserable enough not to actually be able to sleep. So I did what many folks do these days under similar conditions. I stared at my smartphone for hours. Hours and hours and hours. I think I may have actually read the whole internet. Maybe not the whole internet. I did, however, get sucked into a very deep and depressing dive into the news and analysis and opinion from various perspectives about what's going on in the Middle East right now, how the rest of the world is reacting and responding to the terrorist attack in Israel and Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip, and what the future may hold. It is almost always the case that strange alliances are formed in times of conflict and war. You can see it throughout history. Longtime adversaries somehow find a way to work together to defeat a common rival. I'm sure you've heard that old proverb, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." We see a strange alliance in our story from the Gospel of Matthew this morning, the Pharisees and the Herodians. While the Pharisees and the Herodians did share the Jewish faith, they disagreed about fundamental issues, about how strictly to observe the law of Moses, about the Roman occupation and whether and how much to cooperate with their oppressors, about who should lead the Jewish people once they were finally liberated. But the Pharisees and the Herodians are incentivized to put their rivalry aside because of an itinerant preacher and healer from Nazareth named Jesus. He is their common enemy. And if you're wondering how it has come to this, remember that by this point in his ministry, Jesus has entered Jerusalem, acclaimed as king and Messiah by the crowds, a very threatening development. Jesus has also cleansed the temple in rather dramatic fashion, literally shaking things up and turning things over. And following his triumphal entry into the city and his holy tantrum, Jesus has told a number of very pointed parables, including the parables we've heard the past three Sundays about two sons asked to go work in the vineyard, about wicked tenants, and last week's parable of the wedding banquet. Anyone with ears to hear would get that Jesus is going after the religious authorities, including those Pharisees and those Herodians. Jesus is challenging their self-righteousness, their limited view of the grace and mercy of God, their grasping for power and control, their inability to recognize the Word made flesh, the light of the world, standing right in front of them, inviting them to a new way of living. Of course, given that, the religious leaders would be ever more determined to put Jesus in his place, to entrap him once and for all. So the Pharisees and the Herodians align, approaching Jesus with all sorts of saccharine, affirming words about his sincerity and truthful teaching and impartiality. And then they lay out their trick question: is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? Now, you need a little more background here to understand why exactly this was a trick question. The tax being asked about here was the annual head tax imposed by Rome. This tax was equivalent to a laborer's daily wage and had to be paid with a Roman coin, a denarius, which had the image of the emperor stamped on one side and an inscription on the other: Tiberius Caesar, August son of the divine Augustus, most high priest. Now, we all know how popular taxes are in general. But this tax and the way it had to be paid was really troubling for Jewish people. First of all, it reminded them that they were not in charge of their own destiny, but subject to the authority and rule of Rome. And the fact that they had to possess and use a denarius to pay the tax, a coin stamped with the image of the emperor on one side and the claim of his divine status on the other, well, this was blasphemy against God's law, particularly the commandments against graven images and idolatry. And so the trap is set. If Jesus says yes to paying the tax, people will be able to accuse him of supporting the Roman occupation. That's bad. If Jesus says no to paying the tax, people will be able to accuse him of being a rebel and a traitor to Rome. Also bad. But Jesus understands what's happening. In the box the Pharisees and the Herodians are trying to put him in, and he busts their box wide open. Hey, Go ahead and give the guy whose image is on the coin his coin. And then it comes. And give to God the things that are God's. It's a great answer. A win-win for Jesus when the religious authorities were going for the lose-lose. But as it turns out, Jesus' clever answer won't save him. The Pharisees and the Herodians may have been amazed by it, as the Gospel of Matthew reports, but by the end of this chaotic, crazy final week of his earthly ministry, Jesus' controversial teaching and preaching and healing will have become too much to ignore or tolerate any longer. He will be betrayed, arrested, tried, condemned, nailed to a cross, buried in a tomb. But he also will be raised from the dead. And on that glorious Easter morning, in the resurrection of Jesus, God made us a promise that the sorrows of this tragic, sinful world, a world where just and unjust wars are waged, where innocent civilians suffer and die at the hands of terrorists, where disease and accidents and violence wreak havoc, that those sorrows will come to an end. We bear the sign of resurrection promise on our brow. The cross of Christ with which we were marked in our baptism, that is the image imprinted on us, beloved children of God. It makes us God's forever, always. It calls us into service. It bids us to follow, and it gives us certain hope that goodness and light and love will have the last word.